listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network, now the largest new media platform on the web and your number one source for after-show entertainment. From the AfterBuzz studios in Los Angeles, California, presented by Maria Menounos and streaming live thanks to Akamai Technologies, this is AfterBuzz TV's Mad Men After Show. We'll break down tonight's episode and get you all the latest news and gossip. And now, another post-game wrap-up show for your favorite TV show. It's AfterBuzz TV's Mad Men After Show.
Hey there, Mad Men fans. It is a pleasure to be here talking to you on the Mad Men After Show. This is Season 7, Episode 6, The Strategy. I'm Matt Lieberman. Joining me as always, fantastic panels here. Joe Braswell's here.
Here I am.
Joseph Sanfilippo's here.
Nice to be with you guys.
And Sterling Cates is here.
Hello.
Yeah, we missed you two last week, but...
I'd like to think
that we held it down in your absence with the lovely Kirsten Ford.
I had the lovely Kirsten Ford all to myself. Mm-hmm. Lovely Rin, but she was over there with me.
Yeah, so he had her all to himself, but I think we did a lovely job. And just what an episode tonight. So much to discuss and zero time to do it in. So we're gonna do as best we can by you in the limited time that we have, because yes, I absolutely adore this episode. You know, the last two episodes have been rather a little cold in that, you know, there's a lot of symbolism, there's a lot of maneuvering. We have, you know, this unraveling of Ginsburg last week. And while a lot of it, I think, was very, very arresting to watch and has a great bearing on the series as a whole, this episode just warms you to the core, I think. You know, in really giving us, I think, the peak, perhaps, of the Don-Peggy relationship, where I feel like it's been heading all along, this mutual admiration. In a way, kind of the inverse of their relationship in The Suitcase. And I want to try to unpack that as best we can in the time that we have.
Oh, see what you did there? Unpack The Suitcase.
Right now. We also have the return of Bob Benson. Benson
Watch 2014.
Yes, Benson Watch 2014. Pete's back in New York. So I want to start by talking about Bob Benson. Now, you know, last season, I had it out for Bob.
You had hatred for Bob.
Every
time Bob came on, man, you were you had a vengeance for Bob.
I thought he was up to no good. And it turns out, you know, he's a very decent guy. You know, he came on to Pete at the end of last season, and it wound up bouncing him all the way to Detroit. But he's very, very good at his job. He's very good at his job. And the folks at GM are big fans of his. But unbeknownst to him and to the entire company, they are taking Chevy away from the agency. The tryout was a sensational hit, but it was always intended to bring the car back into the fold and do it internally. Bad news. So, you know, Bob comes back. We don't see him and Pete interact this episode, which is fine, just because they both have so much to do. And, you know, one of the key things that happened last year was we saw Bob and Joan become this, like, cute little partnership where they fit really well together. They're, like, really great partners in every way, except perhaps in attraction.
I feel like you rarely see Joan let her guard down, and she just does that really naturally with Bob for some reason. I don't really like Bob.
Well, I tell you the reason.
What's the reason?
Well, you know, there's no threat. There's no sexuality between them.
Right.
But I had a moment there when he asked, when he proposed. I was like, oh, please don't be his beard for life. You can do so much more than that. And she said the same thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, we're gonna get into that. The first things first, though. So Bob comes back to town with Bill Hartley of GM, and he receives a call in the middle of the night, and Bill has been arrested for attempting to fellate an undercover officer. Now, this episode takes place in June of 69. So it's like right around the time of the Stonewall riots. You know, we kind of get a sense of this, of the anti-gay sentiment kind of just being out in the air from the way that the, you know, the night, bailiff or whoever it was that released Bill was treating, both Bill and Bob.
Yeah, he tells him to get his head his head shrunk.
Yeah. Yeah.
Good night, ladies.
Yeah, good night, ladies, your boyfriend.
Boyfriend. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, later on with Roger in the steam room, with Jim from McCann. And, you know, Bob is mortified picking this guy up from court. And, you know, Bill asks him, have you ever been arrested? And Bob is just, no, I have never been arrested. Right. I am not of your stripe. This is – he does not want Bill's life. And Bill makes a reference to his wife being very understanding. And I think that this is kind of like – the arrangement that maybe he's trying to set up with Joan, that, you know, I feel like Bill's wife is very aware of what's going on, but she leads a comfortable life. You know, they love each other. They probably raised a family together, you know, despite not having really any attraction between them. But that's what it is. It's an arrangement. It works.
It's interesting to think of, like, you know, what it's like to be a gay man in 1969, mm-hmm. Especially one transplanted from Michigan to New York. Like I said, there's so much temptation. I don't know how you did this, but the whole notion of that, like, you know, two different types of guys. One guy is if you're closeted and you want to be able to find people, it usually was sort of this sometimes this sort of underground way of doing things. Others like Bob Benson, you can do your business but keep it completely secret, with, you know, keep it above board but secret.
Right.
They're both secrets but different types of secrets. So that's an interesting contrast.
Maybe in special cases when you have strong feelings for someone, you know, you make an overture for someone that you really do love, and you're not just seeking out gay sex. And I think on some level, you know, Bob, like, is disgusted by what has happened to Bill, but at the same time is jealous of his ability to be himself within the confines of this oppressive society. You know, Bob wishes that he had it so easy where he could just go and get gay sex, you know, out in a park somewhere. But that's not who Bob is. He values himself too highly to, you know, just go, you know, kind of sleep with someone he doesn't know.
Well, it's reckless. And Bob's not reckless. Bob is very, very careful about everything he does. And Bill, clearly, that's a reckless move. And he's one of those GM guys who we've shown all through last season. Their culture at that company was very reckless. Yeah, we just do crazy shit. That's what we do. We're going to go nuts.
Bob recognizes that he has so much to lose in this situation, whereas Bill might not, because he already has the wife set up. He has this whole front that everyone believes, and I think Bob wants that same thing.
And it's also the presumption that, you know, being gay is about gay sex, which it isn't.
Right.
Like, you know, so like for Bob, being, you know, he's gay, but maybe he wants love and a relationship and a boyfriend.
And
whereas it's not just about getting gay sex.
I cannot remember the name of the play. I was looking it up, but I can't find it. But this what he was talking about, Bill's life was the common way to be a gay man in the 50s and 60s.
Mm-hmm.
That was how you did it.
Right.
You had a wife and you raised kids, and you did what you had to do to make sure you had kids, and then you had your guy on the side.
But there's a difference between having your guy on the side and going out into parks randomly.
Oh, no question. Yeah. That's what I'm saying.
That's the distinction Bob's making.
Between Bob and Bill.
I'm not of your ilk.
I'm not of your stripe. I'm not going to go jump out there and try and fillet an officer.
Yeah.
We keep saying fillet because we're grown-ups on the show.
Fillet.
Yes. It's a fun word to say. Yeah, fillet, you know, to perform fellatio.
Did I say fillet?
Yeah. But here's the thing, right?
That's Bobby Flay.
It's because you just watched Hannibal.
It might be.
Right. Yeah.
We did. We just did Hannibal, and they do a lot of flaying, but it's very different.
All right. So I don't think, you know, when Bob makes this overture to Joan and he proposes to her, I don't think that that's the life that he wants. And I think it's another testament to why Joan and Bob get along so well. They do have similar values. Bob doesn't want to have, you know, the beard wife so that he can have a relationship and be protected. I think that that's just what he thinks a position as an executive at Buick would require.
I agree.
I think he wants the freedom to pursue a love in the open, you know, the way that he could potentially today, but it was impossible back then.
I agree. I think that it's more about what he needs to fulfill this role with Buick. He's mm-hmm. like, Buick guys expect a certain thing.
I do wonder, and this is something I couldn't answer because I'm not gay, but I would love the internet to tell us. I can't mm-hmm. believe it or not, but I wonder if there were men with the expectation in the 50s and 60s that they could live a lifestyle where they have kids and a marriage. I mean, we have this idea now that because we've gone to this place that was something that people have been striving for a long time. I mm-hmm. wonder if that was even on anybody's radar at that time.
No chance.
I don't think so. I suspect that the winning, the best case scenario would have been what Bill has, where you're raising the family, you're doing the mm-hmm. you have your sons and your daughters, and you have your stuff on the right. side.
Best case scenario.
Until, go
well,
ahead.
I just thought the whole proposal to Joan by Bob was really selfish, because he wants to live a life and pursue love and have this open relationship and stuff. And so to propose to Joan and suggest that she can't do that anymore mm-hmm. And be in a loveless marriage, I just thought that was really selfish on his part to not.
I agree.
Because she obviously deserves to find a husband who she can love and, you know, have.
Well, hot woman's take right there. Yeah. That's
right.
A good take.
Well, let's talk about where Joan is emotionally in this moment, right? This really is, when she turns down this proposal, to me, is the ultimate moment of self-actualization for the character. When we meet her, she puts all of this value on, you know, how to present yourself to nab a man, a successful man who's right. going to give you a good life, who's going to take you out of an office so you don't have to work there anymore.
He's a doctor.
You know?
Yeah, like there, yeah.
Exactly. You know, Greg was the handsome doctor, presumably from a good family, and it was an utter absolute disaster.
Well, even Roger right. before that.
He yeah, was even
always,
Roger.
He was always sort of like looking for that person of power.
Roger's the continual disaster.
Right.
Well, I
right.
still think there's something with Joan and Roger.
Well, they have,
I kind of hope so.
Sure.
I like Roger.
Well, they have such a history. They have so much history together, but I don't know how romantic it could be going forward, because I feel like she's evolved too much
right.
and he's evolved too much and they've grown in different directions.
No, right. he's still you know, dedicated to being a child for the rest of his life. I mean, he's, you know, I'm going to explore hippy-dippy stuff, but at the end of the day, he's kind of living a kid's life. She's really an adult at this point.
Yeah.
And she wants a mature relationship. And it's very interesting to me that Bill, the first person that Bill went after when he came in the office was Joan.
Mm-hmm.
First person he looked at to make sure everybody knew he was into girls was
right.
Joan.
Yeah. Yeah.
And of course, there goes Bob going after Joan.
Right.
And it's interesting to see the evolution of the character, how all men recognize that either we're into Joan or we ought to be into Joan.
That Joan is a status symbol.
Absolutely.
Right. Yeah.
And now she wants to be a woman.
Yeah. She's saying, I'm not a status symbol. I'm a person, and I would rather be
Absolutely.
Alone for the rest of my life.
Or live with her mom for the rest of my life.
Or live with my mother in a two-bedroom apartment for the rest of my life than be in a loveless marriage, even to my best friend.
And I will say this, though, that she has that option because she's a partner. If she wasn't a partner, if she was just an office girl, she would take Bob's offer in a heartbeat. Imagine all the struggle that would be going on money-wise every step of the way.
But what you're saying there is completely diminishing his entire point.
No, it's
her growth.
But are you saying she only evolved because she's a partner? If she's not been a partner, she would have not evolved.
No, your option. I'm just saying that the character's options are limited. If there's financial stress, your options are limited. Okay. If you don't have the financial stress because you're a partner, mm-hmm. then you have the option to grow.
I would believe Joan would have said no, whether she's a partner.
I think Joan has more integrity than that, even before the growth.
Well, go back to the other woman in season 5, right? She had to sacrifice a great portion of her dignity and a great portion of her pride for the agency and in exchange for this partnership. Yeah. I think that
it didn't come cheap, man.
It didn't come cheap, and it's a memory that I think will always haunt her. It's brought her great fortune in terms of being a partner, now being an account executive, being, you know, the woman that she was to the women in the Steno pool in 1960. She now is in the world. To everyone. She is a powerful woman. And I do understand your point, Joe, in that if she didn't have these things, and if she hadn't had the experiences that she gained from what it took to get those things and to strive for those things, I think there would be a lot more temptation because she wouldn't have the money and she wouldn't necessarily... I don't know how far she would have come in terms of knowing her own self-worth until she took it for herself.
You make a great point. I mean, she would have a lot more temptation. I would like to believe that the evolution of Joan as an individual has more to do with what she's been through and not necessarily what her financial status is. Or
right.
So I'd like to believe that. And I also want to say this is just another great point of what this whole series has done. If you look at the series from 1962, whatever it was, to 1969, the story of these women, the evolution of all these women.
Mm-hmm. It's incredible.
Where they all started to where they all now, including, and maybe we'll get to what we talked about last time, including Betty to a certain degree. I mean, Betty's sort of she's gone up and down. And to that point, if Bob Benson offered that to Betty, you know, maybe Betty would have taken it, but maybe not. Betty's had a similar arrangement with
Henry.
Henry, you know, right
Although
now.
Although, you know, there's love there. They're fighting right now, but there's definitely love there. I do agree with you also, Sterling, that it's incredibly selfish of Bob to say, listen, you're old enough, you're pushing 40.
You're washed up.
You're washed up. There's no way that anyone else as good as me is going to come along.
This is the best offer you're going
to
get.
To tell Joan she's washed up when she gets as much as
exactly. Which is preposterous. And, you know, like, look, he is essentially a father figure to her son, to Kevin.
Okay, Kevin gets a
along,
father?
Yeah, he gets along great with her mother. It would be an ideal partnership, but Joan already has a partnership. She has a partnership to this company. And if she's going to partner herself with anybody else, it's going to be because she loves them enough that it is worth sharing her life with them. Not because she's a status symbol, not because someone can provide for her. She is now in a position as a successful, powerful woman that if she wants something, she can take it, and she's not going to sacrifice any part of her life ever again.
And we've seen so many loveless marriages on Mad Men. So mm-hmm. for her to be the first person to say, I don't want that for myself was a great
Let me toss something out there, though, because I think it's worth discussing that the women who are the most successful at the firm are also the loneliest.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And this is the 60s, and this goes on in the 70s, and this goes on to our childhood when we were in the 70s and 80s, too. It's not easy to be a powerful woman. Peggy is all alone. So is Joan.
I feel like that's still the case today.
It probably is. But so it's worth pointing out that
I feel like
that there's a lot of scenes that aren't in the show that, you know, a lot of scenes of Joan alone at night living a very, very mirrored life to Peggy.
Right.
That are worth. Yeah. It's worth pointing out that's there.
Well, we're going to talk a lot about Peggy because I feel like this is kind of a turning point in that loneliness. There's a moment of connection that obviously the slow dance, and we're going to talk all about it. I want to move on to Roger while we can. You know, a few scenes him in the steam room at the New York Men's Athletic Club. And Jim from McCann, who we've seen a few times this season, sidles up to him, and he's basically sizing him up. He kind of makes this overture as if to say, you know, come work for us, maybe?
I didn't quite get what he was trying to do.
I don't understand what happened there either.
He's trying to get under... So he's trying to get under his skin. He knows that SC&P is going to lose Chevy. He knows that that's happening. He knows that Bob Benson is going to Buick. He wants to make sure, or try to get a sense of, is SC&P also going to Buick? All he knows, I think, at this point, is that they're losing Chevy and or that that Bob's going to Buick. So he's just trying to get a sense of what their ambitions are, because he knows that they're growing. They're going after bigger things. They're going after a fast food chain. Yeah, it's not McDonald's, but it's still a player in a big industry. They're going after tobacco all over again. You know, they made overtures earlier in the season that they wanted Don. Maybe his offer, his saying, you know, maybe I can make your concerns our concerns, is saying, you know, if it makes it easier on you, give Don to us. Take this, you know.
Take Commander cigarettes. Take Philip Morris, and we'll take Don.
Yeah.
You think that's what that was?
I think that's potentially what it was. I think that he's just trying to get a sense of what SC&P is trying to do. I don't know that he necessarily would do anything ever to help the company.
Sure.
I think that he would, after this whole Philip Morris deal implodes, they'd scoop up Don for a song. That's maybe what he's trying to do.
Hmm.
But in any case... Roger doesn't really realize the impact of this information until later in the episode where it's revealed by Cutler that we're losing Chevy, and he calls it this failure on the part of Roger, who, you know, was unaware. He says to Joan later, you know, later on, you know, like, why didn't you tell me? I could have done something. She's like, there's nothing that could be done. There's nothing that could be done. And he realizes the significance of what's going on with what McCann did earlier. Now, we're setting up this, we've been setting up this kind of like internal civil war among SCNP. Where are the lines being drawn? You know, Don is sort of the focal point. Jim and Lou do not want Don there. Cooper is not really swayed by emotion at this point. Don kind of broke his trust, and I think Cooper's going to do what's best for Cooper. I think he also is really pleased that he's working with someone, a.k.a. Cutler, who actually knows how to run a business,
yeah,
which
Cooper,
Roger does not.
I think Cooper's over Don completely. I think he's just completely over him.
Yeah, he's completely over him. He's a liability. And, you know, so Cutler and Lou are trying to score this tobacco account, hoping that it'll push Don out. Don has kind of wedged himself in so that there's a shot that if they get it, he'll still be able to stick around. Roger wants to keep Don. But then also we kind of have this moment at the end of the episode with just Don, Peggy, and Pete. And how beautiful does that picture look?
Man, like I said, family at the table.
Looks like a new agency.
The family at the table, just like Peggy drew it up.
Yeah, and then poor lonely Ted out in California. Yeah.
With that bagel and orange juice on his desk.
He is so irrelevant.
Can I ask you a question, Matt? Like, if Cooper really does want, you know, Don out, which he does, doesn't Cooper have, like, the nuclear option? Doesn't Cooper have the Dick Whitman bomb he can just pull out and push that button and clear everyone out?
You can only use it once.
That?
You can only use it once.
Is that a rule?
Yeah.
And the Dick Whitman bomb is
when it's out, it's out.
Electromagnetic pulse,
and
man,
maybe this is too much of a leap, but, you know, Bert Cooper is a student of Japanese culture and Japanese philosophy.
Art of War.
Art of War, Sun Tzu. And, you know, I think that he plays his cards very close to his chest. Okay. He's very strategic. And he's old enough that it doesn't matter that much.
But he's got it back there. He's got that card.
He's got it. And it's important to point out, I think, at this point in the series, that it is still out there.
Yeah. Well, you know, it seems to me Bert's job is more or less to sit back and make sure that all the proverbial ish stays in the horse. I mean, that seems to be his gig. And so if everybody's willing to get along and we've found the parameters under which we can take Don back and we've set the rules, we've put this collar around his neck so he knows he's stuck in a certain way, then I think he's comfortable as long as everybody's able to work. Right. I think when the workflow is going to get jacked up is when Bert's going to go, okay, listen. But I think he's already set that in place without having to say anything about Dick Whitman or not Dick Whitman. I think he's already set that all up for himself.
Right.
I agree. All right.
And Don's already blown it, by the way, drinking with
he's
Peggy.
He's blown it multiple times.
He keeps blowing it.
So I want to talk about iTunes really quickly just because we are really low on time today. And again, I apologize. We are just slammed here at AfterBuzz. I want to thank everybody who's written to us, who's written these wonderful reviews. You're awesome. It's how we get our sponsors. It's how we get guests. And it legitimately helps the entire AfterBuzz platform. I don't have time to read all of these wonderful reviews, but I will credit everyone for sending one. Thank you to Mickey8888, Ruth in Oregon, Brown Coco, Captain Mensch, Babsy B, Jay Schlepp, Yakes MD, and Matt Place. I loved all of your reviews. They really made me feel great about what we're doing here this season. And thank you all for continuing to support us. Please continue to write in some reviews, and I will credit you all and give you shout-outs next week. So thank you. All right. Pete, I've been excited, waiting all season for Pete to finally land back in New York and see what's up.
Right.
And we start with Pete on the plane with Bonnie. Wonderful Bonnie.
Bonnie.
So perfect for him. They're both sharks.
I love that Bonnie.
What could go wrong with a Bonnie?
Yeah. You know, and it's like...
What
it's,
could go wrong with a Bonnie?
Right. Yeah. And, you know, it's like moments where she tries to... She offers to get to the Mile High Club, and he says...
I've always wanted to
do that.
Can I tell you this? That scene, I love that. But you know what Bonnie did? Bonnie didn't say me too. Bonnie said, ha ha, smile, I'm going.
Yeah.
So I think Bonnie's been a member for a long time.
Yeah, she's been a member for a while.
But it's like, it's a testament. We're looking at, you know, we talked about loveless marriages, right?
Yeah.
You know, the Pete Trudy marriage, he never belonged there. he never belonged in the quintessential 1950s kind of marriage that's typified by the first Burger Chef pitch.
Right.
He's always been a guy who's more married to his work than to his wife. He's kind of like the little kid brother version of Don in that sense, where he derives his fulfillment from what he does, not from building a family. And I feel like Bonnie is very, very similar. And that moment where he's like, this is a thing I've always wanted to do. My wife, who I thought was the kind of person I was supposed to be with, would never have wanted to do something like this.
Truly.
And like, this is, I think, his self-actualization moment, but then he ultimately ruins it later in the episode.
I gotta say, it's so great to have, you know, petulant, pissant, a-hole Pete back, by the way.
Oh, yeah. Well, I don't agree.
Let me clarify.
I like L.A. Pete. I like L.A. Pete for himself, but I mean, just as a
character
to watch,
for you to enjoy,
I like to see Pete do his thing.
And I enjoyed, it was interesting. Bonnie said it really great in the hotel room. I don't like you in New York.
Yeah.
And that is
like
the
no
truth.
No one does.
Yeah, right? Yeah. Nobody did.
No one
and he goes back to the house with Trudy, and he's drinking that beer, and he just looks angry, and he looks like he put on 10 pounds in 15 minutes.
He looks like he's like being eaten away inside.
Yeah. He's always just in like a huff and puff every time he's in New York. Just stomping around.
He's faced immediately with his ultimate failure as a parent.
It's insane. Well, can you imagine anything more hurtful, more painful as a father than your kid hiding behind the nanny who's been around so little you don't even know her name?
Who are you?
I pay you, but I don't know who the heck you are.
Trudy's not even there.
No.
Yeah. She's not even there to greet him.
Out of town.
How badly would it have gone over if Bonnie, as she wanted to come meet Tammy, if she'd actually gone out there?
Yeah.
No, it would have been a nightmare.
And people would have never let that happen.
Did. I don't know. Like, I really like Trudy in this episode. I think she had every right to go on a date.
Absolutely.
Pete gets to join the Mile High Club with Bonnie.
Exactly.
And he won't even let Trudy go on a date because it's immoral.
I was not happy.
It was,
of course.
A massive double standard.
And then he said that Trudy was neglecting Tammy.
Right.
Meanwhile, Tammy doesn't even know who he is.
Exactly. Right.
So,
you're a mother. Like, that's just
you have a child.
You have a child.
Here's what I will say.
I was not having that.
When you're divorced and you have you have joint custody of a kid, okay? She at the very least should have
They're not even divorced.
They're not even divorced. They're still married.
They're getting a divorce.
They're getting a divorce. But she should have at least been more in communication with Pete and not been late coming home. You know, her car was in the driveway, but she wasn't there. You know, she made it so that she didn't have to see Pete at all. I understand that. But make it clear so that he's not waiting around
No, no.
The housekeeper was there.
He wanted to hang out because he didn't have his moment with Trudy that he wanted to have.
He wanted to have that moment where he stomps out the beer and the cake. That had nothing to do with
taking care of the kid. He wanted that moment to throw his weight around, and she could care less. And that hurt him. It's the only thing he could do is smash the cake with his beer. That was all he had. That was his last move.
And I must say, 1969 looks pretty good on Trudy, too. Nelson Brie.
Yeah, and she's, she's living her life as she should. You know, which is great. Just New York does something ugly to Pete.
Yeah.
Where, you know, he gets this fulfillment at work. But the fact is, he's faced with the fact that he is a failure as a husband. He's a failure as a father.
Yeah.
It's maybe not a role he was ever destined to play, but that is his reality.
Yeah.
He does have a kid who doesn't know who he is and honestly couldn't care.
It was good to see him walk back in the office, though, with the tan face and the sideburns and... You know, the hot girlfriend, he's very, very happy for at least a minute.
Ultimately, he pushes her away by, you know, revealing his petulant side.
Right. Yeah, who's never been in L.A. He's never been a powder. Wow. He's never been a little beach in L.A.
This was Pete, as we know Pete. Everything we saw, like, oh, there he is.
Which is why, you know, it would have been very interesting to see what would happen if Bonnie had come with him to Tammy's and maybe would have gone better. But honestly, having her see that firsthand would have, I think, been ugly.
Well, that's why he didn't want her to come.
And is Bonnie going? Bonnie was on a plane, right? Like, is Bonnie
gone? Yeah, I want to talk about
that.
Bonnie and Megan both on the plane back to L.A. I think there's a lot going on there. We're going to get to Megan and Don a little bit later.
We're about to.
Let's talk about that, because that plane ride back, both the L.A. girls are going home, and that, I think, ends a couple of things.
They both had very different looks on their face. Bonnie looked a little, obviously, upset, and Megan looked... at peace, like she was excited to go back to
her
turf.
She was relieved.
Right.
Yeah, I think
so
you're right. I think
that's
the right
term. Let's talk about Don and Megan. So Megan shows up at the office, seemingly out of nowhere. Again, you know, smacked in the face with the realization that Don doesn't ever talk about her.
I didn't know you were married.
Ever. I didn't know Don was married.
Yikes.
Huge insult. Yeah. And, you know, watching their interactions, it's like it's like back to being kind of like nervously cold. Like they obviously they love each other in that they've invested so much time and energy and passion into this relationship. But they both know it's over.
Right.
They refuse to admit it aloud, but she basically came home to get the rest of her stuff.
Yeah.
Right.
And she says, I want to see you, not in L.A., not here, somewhere else.
Somewhere
well,
new.
That was after like, he was pushing right. the issue about.
Right. But
yeah, well, he feels uncomfortable in L.A. on her turf, and she feels uncomfortable in New York right. on his turf, so.
But at this point,
meet in the middle, maybe.
Do we really think that wherever they go, they're going to be able to reconcile?
No, but do we even think that that's what Megan wants?
I mean, I don't think so.
When she said that,
it
that
sounded
felt like
she just didn't even want him to come to L.A. ever again.
But no, she looked afraid when he said he was coming in July. She looked scared. Like oh, why?
You're coming, don't come now. I've got a guy there.
Right, yeah. I got a fondue pot. I got to pour some cheese on him. It's crazy. L.A.'s wild, man.
Yeah.
No, but also when she said that statement about, like, you know, we'll meet somewhere else, that didn't feel like she really meant that. It felt like an excuse. It felt like, oh, don't come home. We'll meet in Cleveland. Like, it just felt like it didn't feel like.
Cleveland's where
genuine.
All the good stuff happens.
So to answer your question,
Cleveland.
I don't think that it's Megan's intention at all to reconcile. I think
I don't think
wants
so.
To go back.
And you know, it was interesting because there were so many tableaus in this episode. There were so many like
so many what?
Tableaus,
yes,
like
sir.
Long shots,
beautiful shots. Yeah,
just
sure.
absolutely beautiful tableaus. But one of them was Don and Megan on that patio where she's made breakfast for him, mm-hmm. and he comes out there, and I mean they look like just paintings. They're so beautiful, the two of them together.
Yeah.
But he comes out there and he's standing behind her, and he's, you know, he's kissing her, and he's for him that's perfect. And he saw her from inside the bedroom, and he's looking at her, and he's got
and she's a vision,
absolutely everything mm-hmm. he wants. And she could not be more miserable to be where she is.
Yeah.
And he comes out and he gives her that kiss and she's got that uncomfortable.
She flinches.
Yeah.
And you can feel from her that this, if she accepts this life, it is a complete acceptance that she did not make it as an actress. It's a complete acceptance that her career never happened. It's an acceptance that she needed him and couldn't do it on her own.
She's weighing the decision. She's basically weighing the Joan decision, you know?
Right.
Is it worth being in this marriage? What is it offering me? And do I have a shot at the life I deserve?
Right.
And the juxtaposition that we saw between when Don's in L.A. and Megan's in her element, completely happy, and Don's miserable versus when Megan's in New York and Don's, like, couldn't be happier mm-hmm. and Megan seems to be miserable is interesting, such as what Kristen said last week about, you know, how, you know, Megan, remember how Don looked at Megan in back in the Zooby Zooby Zoo episode, how he loved her. Like, he's just totally engrossed by her. At the party, he looked at her like disgusted. And now, back in New York, he's looking at her like that again.
Right.
So,
and he says, you know, like, I'm sure you missed this place. How could you not miss this place? And she's like, I missed you.
Yeah.
She doesn't miss New York. She doesn't miss the way it feels. I think she misses the way their marriage was.
I got to completely agree with Megan, by the way. I never miss New York.
I
love it all you want. LA is so much better.
I agree with Don.
But you know what? The other thing I think going on that I don't think we've talked about is Don is not the man anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's somewhat diminished. Comparatively speaking,
their marriage.
But are you saying that has anything to do with Megan's decision? Are you saying like Megan?
No, I think that it's interesting that when she got with him, he had the corner office.
Of course,
remember that.
And have that moment where she's like, "Soon enough, you'll be in Don's office."
And she's like, says it's not
right,
that
not much better than mine.
Yeah,
he's
you know?
In Wayne's office.
So I mean, like,
yeah,
I'm not right.
It might be worse.
Yeah.
His is freaking haunted. His has got dead Englishmen all over the place.
That's horrible.
But I really, I just think that, and I'm not saying that's a huge deciding factor, but it's definitely going on. Like, Don is not, she's not the little girl, and he's not the man anymore.
But I would ask you, or all of you, actually, like, do you think that Megan's intention was to go out and sort of survey the landscape and really make a decision, like,
no, I don't
do
think
I really
so.
Want to be there, or was it a decision to grab her ish and get the hell out of here?
I think it was to grab all of the rest of her stuff and get back to L.A.
Do you guys think that was conscious, or do you think that
I mean, kind of
100%?
Oh, okay.
I think
look at how their marriage has been structured since she moved out there. This is apparently to date her first visit back to New York period, since she moved out there. The rhythm has been she's living her life, and he can enter it or leave it whenever he sees fit. She wants him to do it more often. But as things continue to get colder and more desperate, you know, the threesome last week being a huge example of that, I think she's realizing...
No marriage ever survives.
I think she's realizing it's time to maybe consider cutting her losses and getting her things. She says she missed her things in, I think, a far more convincing way than she said she missed him.
Right.
She just...
Well, let me toss this out there. You tell me what you think.
Okay.
They got lots of money. Money's not an issue. So if she wants to get new things, she can go out and get new things. I don't know from fondue. I really don't. I'm lactose intolerant. But I don't know if there are such things as family heirloom fondue pots. So, I mean, I would imagine it would be more of a combination of things. You know, like, yes, I'm coming back here to get my fondue pot. I'm going to buy 16 fondue pots. Who cares? I feel like she went back. She was game. She was game for this, and in the course of that trip back, I think is when it all died.
That's where I'm leaning towards, because it really felt like in their futures, a lot of things there along the way that kind of like the whole I didn't know Don was married.
Right.
That's like strike one. And the conversations on the phone, but it felt like for a moment there, for a few moments that they were happy together. It was good to see Don so happy, and maybe I was focused on Don. I'm like, oh, Don's really happy.
It was the black polo and the slacks. He's looking good. Yeah. He looks healthy. He opened that bottle of wine. That's how he does it.
It didn't actually tune into Megan. I'm like, because I'm a stupid man, I'm like, oh, Don's great, Megan's back, woo, New York. But then after a while, I'm like, wait a minute, Megan is not having this.
I agree with you, Joe, in that, you know, maybe she had some hope that things could be fine, and then seeing the reality of it reinforced the fact that, like, it's time to get my stuff. Also, you know, a woman preparing for a divorce, and potentially an ugly one, I think that she's going to grab whatever she can just in case. Just in case he tries to keep it, just in case he tries to, you know, keep more of the money. Now,
she might have to sell that fondue pot.
Yeah, that was going to say, what if that's worth a lot of money?
Exactly.
Or like I don't know from fondue pots.
I don't know if they did prenups back in the day, but...
This is a slimy flangy doo fondue pot. This slingy dangy foo fondue pot is worth $300 million. I don't know. I'm not sure what...
Well, he offered to take her shopping as well as... Pete offered to take Bonnie shopping, or not to take her, but for her to do it on her own.
Right.
Like, what else could they possibly want to do in New York, you know, other than shop?
Yeah.
Well, so tell me, I'm curious, because I've been there a bunch of times.
I personally like the shop, but they didn't give him any other options.
Here, we're low on time, so I want to move into this Don-Peggy relationship. So, you know.
Last thing. Plane ride back. Mm-hmm. You got Megan and Bonnie. Both girls are heading back to L.A. alone. That was the whole point.
Yeah. I agree with you there. That was a scene.
That was a scene. It happened in the show. There was a curtain moving on.
That happened.
Peggy, you know, over the course of this season, she's been dealing with a whole lot. She's the copy chief. She's getting bigger accounts and having Don on her team. Difficult at first, and now it's becoming, you know, more normal. Pete, being Pete, you know, he wants what he feels is the best chance at selling these ideas. And in his mind, that's Don. He's been pushing Don this whole time since he got Burger Chef on the table.
I love that.
Yeah. Well, of course we do, because we love Don.
A lot of people being an outsider coming in like, what's going on in this office? Don's right there. Like, get Don in here. What are you guys doing?
They're right. Like, it's a huge bummer for Peggy,
like,
because she's grown a whole hell of a lot as a creative, as a boss. You know, Don is working for her. He's swallowed his pride, and he's doing it seemingly very, very well.
Yeah.
They've reached a nice, easy rapport. But as they present this, you know, this idea of Burger Chef, which is a very solid pitch, if a bit old-fashioned, it doesn't reflect the woman that she meets at the top of the episode. We look into this car. This woman is exhausted. She is miserable.
Right.
She doesn't care about your questions. She just doesn't want to go home to a fight. She's pissed off that she's buying this fast food instead of being able to provide for her family. And, you know, she resembles, I think, a growing number of people with kids in the 60s, in the late 60s.
Of course.
You know,
that's how I grew up in the 70s.
Yeah, life becomes more and more complicated. You're doing far more. You don't have time to make a roast every night. You just don't. And, you know, Lou loves this idea. Pete wants to have Don pitch it, which is just crushing. because it's the same thing all over again, like when Don was in charge.
She's as good as any girl in the business.
Yeah. Yeah.
Any girl.
Yeah. Any girl.
Ridiculous. You know,
all
it's,
two of them.
It's glow.
Right? As good as the other
let
one.
Me, let me throw this out there. It's glow coat all over again.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's her idea that Don took and turned into a commercial got the Clio.
She dropped that on him, too. Remember?
Right. Yeah.
I love that Pete is here to
that's
give
That's
what
Don. The money is for! Yeah.
That was one of my favorite scenes in
yeah.
I love that Pete is here to help kind of push Don, give him some more power, but I really don't want to see Peggy fall back into
exactly.
the
Exactly. And I don't think that she will after this episode.
Right, I don't think so either.
Yeah. So, you know, and the worst part is they say, we want Don to pitch it and then to hand over to you for the mother's voice of reason, but it's your decision.
Yeah.
It's your decision.
And then they submarine her with Ted on the phone.
Mm-hmm. I agree, Peggy. Huh?
What?
Who is that?
Damn it. It's me, Ted. You are such a-holes.
Yeah. Is he always just waiting for someone to have a conversation with him on the phone?
that's what he does.
He's got to have someone to talk to.
What are you doing? I'm man in the box.
It's your decision, Peggy.
What? She is, you know, incensed, and she doesn't really feel like she has any wiggle room on the subject. If she says no, she's going to look like the difficult woman who, you know, refused to take... And not a team player who refused to take anyone's advice, and if it blows up in her face, she will eat all of the crow. She will. You know, it's going to be her failure instead of, you know, the team doing
absolutely.
Everything that they could. So she goes to Don and she, you know, posits it as her idea. And he immediately sees through it. It's like, BS. Whose idea is this? Yeah. Who told you to do this?
And he didn't want any part of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, at the very least, just because he doesn't want to step on her toes. The idea, I think, does excite him. And finally, he does.
Well, we see him celebrate when she leaves.
Yeah, so he accepts. And then he's like, yeah, I'm back.
Yeah.
I get to present. This is what I was born to do, you know. And but as she leaves, he just throws out an idea. He just throws out, just toying around. What if it was from
noodling.
The kids?
Noodling. I was doing some noodling.
Yeah. Yeah. Noodling.
What if it was all from the kids' perspective? I don't know. And I've never heard him be this kind of casual throwing out an idea.
It's not his. It's not his ass on the line. It's her ass and Lou's ass.
Yeah, but
his ass is off to the side.
But Don, I don't know. We can discuss this if we had time. But I know Don knew what he was doing when he did that. Because
right.
Don, that was genuinely. He kind of knew that the idea is like, Peggy, there's better stuff. I don't know. I don't want not my place. But that was kind of new list with the kid interview.
And it's pulling a thread, and the whole sweater starts to unravel, and she no longer has confidence in the idea. She, in her mind, knows that Don is, like, saving some perfect idea that he's been saving all along that he was never going to share with her at any point during the development, just hoping, waiting for some man to say, no, Don should do it, and he'll just swoop in, and he'll just say the perfect tag at the end of the meeting, like it just came to him in the moment.
Yeah, like
do I do that?
Oh, that 10 minutes or 7 or 8 minutes, wherever that was, where Peggy's like just agonizing about Don, and that was so painful. I was so sick of Peggy. Like, I'm like, Peggy, I'm screaming at the screen, like, you know, Don is a creative genius. You love Don. Don loves you. Get in the room. Fix it. You know, hold on. Like, do it. And took this dim, and they did that ultimately. It was great.
Right.
I love the way it played out, but God, that whole process of watching Peggy be like, Don, and I hate this, and I hate you.
Her call with Stan.
Yeah, all of that.
That relationship is still so weird.
I love Stan, too.
And, you know, maybe they'll wind up together. I don't know. But, you know, she goes back to the office to try to figure this thing out. She's obsessed. She can't figure it out. She calls Don at home. He sits down to dinner with Megan, but ultimately winds up back at the office.
I love it.
And, you know, she's like, I need you to tell me how you would do it. How do you make this happen? Which is honestly, I feel like a question many viewers have been asking since the start of the series, pulling back the cloak a little bit. And he's like, well, you know, you have to think about what the client is feeling, what they're thinking, and like what the consumer is thinking. And if I don't necessarily feel as confident in an idea as I did before, I go back to the start and see if I wind up in the same place.
He takes a nap and goes back to start.
But he berates the people he can.
Which she did.
But the whole point was, what do I want? Mm-hmm. Not what does the client want.
Yeah, what do I want?
Not what does Lou
my
want.
My way.
What do I want?
What is my way?
And that's what
symbolism
he tried to get
enough for
Peggy
you?
To do. Oh, and then my way at the end.
And
because I'm a Frank freak, so that was a beautiful thing. But anyway, that's the integral thing is my, what do I want? What do I want? And trying to get Peggy to decide what she wanted.
Okay. So we get this scene where, you know, she realizes that that type of family doesn't exist. They're reminiscing about 1955 and 1965, which for Peggy was a great year. For Don, maybe not as great. I mean, he married Megan, but it was still, it was a rough one. And, you know, this song is playing, and apparently it's playing all the time in the summer of 69. You know, she reaches this moment. She realizes, you know, like that burger chef is whoever you're sitting there with is your family. And it's this very beautiful, very real, very modern sentiment, taking meals out of the home where, yeah, you know, family togetherness is becoming less and less important or less and less manageable, and putting them in this shiny, clean, new space that is meant specifically for communal gathering.
Absolutely.
And, you know, in this celebration, this moment where the student becomes the master and she reaches the idea, not Don, she does, kind of taking the suitcase where she's throwing ideas against the wall all night, and finally he comes up with the thing. And that's how it's always been. And finally, she gets her victory and they celebrate together. And I love this shot where, you know, on the right side of the frame, they're dancing, and then on the left side of the frame, you see this reflection, and you kind of get this sense of who they were and who they are, and this mutual admiration and love and respect. And it's like, I know it's not a romantic couple, but they are the couple.
That was perfect.
Heart of the show.
Yeah. Perfect moment, and very eloquently put by you.
I said that better myself.
But yeah, no, but a perfect, perfect man. Yeah, thank you. A perfect Mad Men moment for all those reasons you said, but also just getting us inside what Mad Men does, both getting us inside the creative process.
Yes.
In a way that, like, you know, that is as wonderful, and also be able to, you know, repair this relationship that we know and see and we're invested in, and see them both get together as creatives and as people who care about each other.
Yes.
All in the same moment. And also what Peggy said, when trying to crack this whole thing, when she talked about this family, she's like, does anyone do that anymore? Like,
yeah,
like we said earlier, like, it's 1969. Does that family even exist? Like, who are we? And it kind of is a metaphor for what they used to do and how they used to present things. And they're responsible for this image of this family. They're partly responsible for the image of love and this family and all these other things that as admin that they've brought onto society. Mm-hmm. And now they're looking back like, well, does this exist anymore? What can we do to reject what the new family is?
Have we been lying to the American public for years? Have we been selling them on a dream that no longer exists?
Do you remember doing that? I don't remember that.
Right. And none of them can relate to that traditional family that they're trying to sell.
No, they can't. Look at Pete and Bonnie, who may never have a family at all if they're able to work out their differences.
Right.
And they finally meet with Pete at Burger Chef.
Yep.
And, you know, Pete tries to railroad Peggy, and Don says, no, she's going to do it her way. And symbolism achieved. And then we pull out into this temple.
It was such a great shot.
Beautiful. Yep. And, you know, seeing these three together makes us all wonder. We've been thinking about it. Other agency, potentially. All right. Unfortunately, we do have to wrap up. I want to thank everyone for downloading, watching, listening, streaming to the episode. This week, we'll be back with the final episode of 2014 next week. Joe Braswell, where can the people find you?
You can find me on Instagram and Twitter at Joe K. Braswell, and for the season finale, Hannibal and the Americans.
All right. Joe Filippo.
You can find me at Joe Filippo, JoeFlippo, on the Twitters. My website is josephsanfilippo.com.
All right. And Sterling Cates.
I'm on Twitter and Instagram at Sterling Cates.
All right. And you can find me on Twitter at Matt Lieberman. That's MattLieberman. New summer shows, Halt and Catch Fire on AMC. Under the Dome is coming back. I've got The Strain this summer. Grace Point in the fall. Bunch of great stuff. Stay tuned. Also, all my videos on SourceFed. Thank you all. Good night.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later!
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.